everyone. Welcome back to Pencils and Lipstick. I'm Kat Caldwell, and this is episode 228. And today we have an interview with Karen Fisher. We are at the end of April, which seems absolutely bizarre that everything is just going so quickly. I've had a pretty full month. I wanted to be done with, you know, I can't figure out a title for it, but the second book in the historical romance, and I'm almost there, like literally almost there, but I'm not yet. And when I say finished, I mean, you know, completed the drafting process so that I can go back and read it. It wouldn't be ready to send off to an editor yet, but yes. So I leave for Cuba in just 5 days, and I'm really excited about that. And part of my just mental capacity and, you know, time has been spent getting ready for that. I'm very excited about it. You won't see much of me on social media during that time, but I'll put it up afterwards. I think that's just a better idea. Of course, if you guys are on my newsletter, you'll get a little bit more insight, a couple stories from me. I will not be writing at all while I'm there. I will be focusing on what we are doing, the mission that we're accomplishing there, and just being with the women that I'm going with. So that will be a bit of a good mental break, I think. I will report back to you on whether I found that refreshing or frustrating. Who knows? My achiever might just, you know, kick and scream the entire time. But I'm not sure actually that it will, because we'll be accomplishing, you know, measurable items every single day. So I think my achiever will be possibly quieted by that. I am excited that I have the third book of the historical romance completely plotted. I know I said the words plotted. I can't remember if I told you guys about this, but I actually sat down and plotted them. And I have to say, Lewis Jordsad is a genius. He got me to do it in his plotting course. If he offers it again, I highly suggest it. It is an amazing course. He's a great teacher. And just so it just clicked with me. And I hope that it will click again for the pen name that I want to write. So, you know, there's all these things that I want to do, but actually right here, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see all of like 50 scene cards right here. And I think it will actually take every single one of these cards. Who knows? Some of them, you know, might get smashed together, but I'm very excited about that. So I just have to finish the second book, which I kind of then like plotted out the last scenes that I need. But there's something, you know, that I think it's just the preparation for Cuba is like blocking me. So today I have an interview for you. Of course, you don't want to hear me rambling. So I decided, you know, with Cuba and everything coming up, we're going to have lots of interviews. And then we'll come back to maybe some writing tips before we go into summer break. But Karen Fisher is my guest today. She actually has 10 years of literary agent experience, that experience on the traditional publishing side of the publishing world. She niched in children's lit and YA lit, but she has experience in almost every single genre, I think she says. And now she helps people developmental edit their stories. But I really thought, you know, both things are very interesting, and she talks about both things. But I know not all of you are looking for the indie author route. Maybe you're looking to pivot. Maybe you have a different pen name that you want to do, maybe hybrid or traditional. So it's interesting, I think, to hear that opinion and that experience. And I don't usually get the opportunity to speak to people on that side of the industry, because honestly, they're not always interested in talking to us indie writers. So I jumped at the chance to have her come in, and I hope all of you who are looking into indie, into traditional publishing, that you will listen to this episode and check her out on storyandprose.com. She no longer is an agent, but I think this information is going to be really useful to you. So if you have anybody who is a friend, a writer, or looking to write and wants just sort of that insight, share this episode with them. I think they'll find it interesting. And, from here, you might hear something that Karen says that will sort of, turn on a light bulb and help you search elsewhere. And I know some of her answers are a little frustrating because this business, this industry is constantly changing, and it really relies on individuals. And so each agent is an individual. They are very different. Their tastes can change, their wants can change from like literally month to month, right? And so not, there aren't always concrete answers to my question, but I still think that she is full of great wisdom and insight into this. So, without further ado, be sure to share the podcast. It really helps. If you can give a review, that helps as well. I do not put any ads on here. I just kind of want to give you guys this content. FYI, if you're listening on Spotify free, that's just Spotify. Those are not my ads. So, we're going to get into the interview. But yeah, if you guys like the show, please consider giving it a review or just sharing it with all your writer friends. Okay. Hello, everyone. I'm Kat, and I am back on Pencils and Lipstick with Karen Fisher. She is an experience, has experience as a literary agent, and is now book coaching and offering editorial services at storyandprose.com. So we are going to talk about all those things. But first, let's welcome Karen to the podcast. Hi, Karen. How are you doing?
Hi, thanks so much for having me. I'm great. How are you doing?
Good. Okay. I mean, I'm awake. You're like early West Coaster.
Yeah.
like have my lights all shining on me. It's very rainy here, but doing well, and I'm excited to talk to you about all the things that you've done in the publishing world and the writing world because you have a lot of experience
Yeah.
here. But let's start kind of at the beginning. Like, who is Karen? A little bit about you, where you are, and then we'll get into all the other things.
Great. Yeah. So as I was finishing up my college and trying to write, I graduated right in the middle of the giant recession and
Oh, fun.
at a time when I was just kind of like, I really want to do something I love. Okay, well, I love books, so what can I do? Right. So I did a couple of publishing internships thinking that was where I wanted to go. I did the university press that I went to, and then I kind of did a couple internships after that at more trade publishing houses. And then publishing is hard to break into. So I thought, okay, well, what else is there? And eventually I wound up at a bookstore, an indie bookstore, which was one of my favorite jobs ever. So it's just so fun, but I can't work every single weekend. So but at that
Yes.
time I started thinking about, just the whole publishing process and getting interested in writing as well. So I went back to school and got my MFA in creative writing at Lesley University. And then somewhere in there, I was thinking, okay, well, I've seen the industry from like the publishing perspective, from the writing perspective, and now from the bookselling perspective. So there's one more kind of area of traditional publishing that I haven't explored. And so I kind of did some research about local literary agents and happened to find one that was like 20 minutes down the road from me.
Oh, wow.
And I emailed her just kind of like a, hey, if you're looking for even an intern, consider me, please. Didn't hear anything, finished my degree. And then 2 years later, after I sent that email, she finally was like, hey, I need some help. And so I
That's so
started at
funny.
books. I know, right? So if you feel like I just, those emails don't work, maybe they will, maybe they will. So yeah, 2 years it took her to respond to me, but she did. She kept my email. And that was in 2014. And I worked and I still work at Bookstop to this day. And then in 2018, I started kind of building my own client list and sending out
Okay.
projects and negotiating my own clients' books and that sort of thing. And that was really fun. And then when the pandemic hit and I was, focusing on writing and stuff, I also wanted to do a little more to supplement my income. And so I started doing coaching and
Right.
editing on the side and really found that that's sort of where my strengths lie in terms
Okay.
of helping people with the story versus like the the selling it to the publishers, even though that
Sure.
part's really is really fun and exciting too. But
Okay.
so yeah, kind of just a very, very
Yeah.
roundabout journey is how I always describe it.
So you've seen the industry at like really crucial moments, I feel like too, because things have changed since you started. Like at the very beginning, everything's different, it feels like.
Yeah,
So when
before it was
you
like,
go
oh, we
ahead.
had to go to New York to go talk to the publishers, you know, from being from
Really?
California, because that's where everything was. But then when the pandemic hit, it was so much more accessible to just jump on a Zoom call with an editor and ask them
It took to
about
the
what there's.
pandemic for that to change.
It did.
Wow.
I mean, maybe there were others that were already kind of doing it, but that was when it really felt like everything opened up and it was just, you didn't have to, you know, go all the way to New York to have those conversations anymore.
That seems a bit archaic. I don't know.
It can be a very archaic industry, quite honestly, in some ways. Yeah.
Well, it's a huge industry, right? With like lots of different pieces. And so I also understand too, like how difficult it is to move a giant beast that isn't under one roof, right? Like there are several big guys, a couple medium guys, and like to move all of them at the same time is like going to take a lot of effort.
And things are changing still, and I think we're starting to, I don't know, see some good changes and some maybe some not as good changes. I don't know.
We
It's all
shall
up in the
always
air.
see. Yes, this will always be. Who knows? We are just in the middle, just two people. So as far as what made you decide that book coaching and like getting the story was kind of your cup of tea more than helping people when I guess they felt like it was all done and they were ready to sell it?
So I guess it just comes down to that love of reading and love of
Mm.
stories, right? And then also seeing that growth as you say, okay,
Okay.
well, here's what I'm seeing with your book, and here's what I think where it could be better. And then watching them not only take suggestions, not like story specific suggestions, but you know, just general broad notes, and then have them create something totally richer. You know,
Yeah.
I love that transformation and watching writers grow because they've gotten really good feedback that they can actually sink their teeth into, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas so, as a literary agent, you are not somebody who does that sort of thing.
So I love doing that. And there are editorial agents and there are less editorial agents. And I was definitely one of them. And that was my favorite part of the job.
Okay.
And so that was kind of, again, where I felt the most like I could do the most difference and make the most improvement with my
Yeah.
client's
And I
book.
guess
And
then have the most success, right, with them finding a home for that. So when we talk about people, because I was just talking to someone yesterday about she always wanted to get traditionally published, and she has spent probably 3, 4 years just sort of like up and down, trying to find, doing all the like Twitter pitch fest, is that what it's called? Things like that. So when somebody is looking to that route and looking for an agent, like what I think most of them know they have to go, they have to find an agent, see if they're, available when their reading times are. But what tends to be, what do you think writers don't really understand about that process that could maybe help them? Or is there anything that we don't understand? Is it just how it is? I
That's a
guess
good
it is how
question.
it is, but it seems a bit opaque, I guess. It all like both ends tend to feel very frustrated. It feels like there should be a better way to do this, or maybe a better understanding of each other.
I agree. There should be. It is a heartbreakingly slow
Is it? Okay.
industry, right? I mean, I think that you definitely hear those stories about, oh, I had, you know, I did this one Twitter pitch fest and I got an agent immediately. I don't think that that's the common tale. I think it's much more common that you get a lot of crickets and a lot of no responses, slow responses. And it can be really frustrating and heartbreaking. I think that, you know, if a person sort of has that expectation going into it, then I'd like to hope that they're not going to get as frustrated. You know, it's rejection heavy, lots of no's. And that's really doom and gloomy. It's also just, I feel like you have to be sort of set up into, if you decide that that's the route you want to take, like go into it with those expectations. Because a lot of times what I see is, or at least I used to see in my inbox and my submissions was, you'd have these people that were so full of energy and zest, and they were so proud of the book they wrote, as they should be. Writing a book is really hard. It's difficult and it takes a lot of courage and skill, but a lot of times they thought, okay, it's done. Like it's ready to be published. And most of them are not quite yet ready to be published. And so my number one advice I give to anyone that is trying to go traditional is really, you have to make sure your book is really, really that good. Like
Really.
comparatively to what's being published now out there in the world, the story has to be great, the prose has to be good, and it has to be solid. And then
Okay.
also you have to be able to talk about it in a way that
That makes sense.
conveys, that conveys the experience that the reader is going to have when they read it, the hook and the heart and all of that in between the characters, right?
Which isn't easy, right? A lot of
No.
times writers are like, it's about a girl and she goes on this trip. And then, but wait, let me back up.
Right. It is. It's really, really hard. So yeah, I just think it just means that's my biggest thing, is that everyone submits, not everyone, but most people that get immediate rejections are just submitting way too soon.
Really? Okay. So when you say too soon, should people be getting a full edit with their book? So what do you, I think
That's
that's one of the biggest frustrations with people is maybe not understanding how that industry has changed. It's possible that we still think, okay, I've written this. I have edited it. I have read it and reread it, like everyone said I should do. I have maybe gotten some feedback at my local writing group and they think it's great. And now that means it's ready because once it's picked up, the publisher will edit it, right? I think that seems to be our idea.
Yeah, so I think that I have a couple of different thoughts about this. So I don't think that you need to hire an editor in order to get a book deal. I do not think that that is the case at all. I do think that everyone needs to have it vetted by a trusted reader, and whether that is someone in your writer's group or a beta reader that you find online, or a book coach or an editor. If you have the means and the will to do that, then I think that you should do that. But it's not going to make or break the publishing deal or hooking an agent. Absolutely not. There's plenty of people that get published without having had it professionally edited.
So how much of this is luck and being
Oh,
at the right place at the right time?
yeah, there is definitely an element of timing. Like, yeah, luck and timing. Sometimes it just hits when it is. There's a story I always tell that. One of my colleagues at the agency, she was working on this manuscript with an author. It was a picture book manuscript, and it was kind of like about a young girl who starts to have a little crush on another girl. And so this was before you started seeing a lot more of this type of book. And they worked on it, and all the editors were like, like I'm not touching this thing, right? And then it took like maybe 2 or 3 years until finally it was like, okay, the market was actually ready at that point. And then, it kind of had a little auction happen on it because the timing worked out. But the 2 years prior, no, it was not going to work. Right.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
And like if the industry is slow, because it takes what by the time you get sell the book, so as an agent, you still have to sell the book, correct?
Correct.
By the time you get someone to accept a book and publish it. What is the timeline on it getting onto the shelves?
Oh gosh. Well,
I mean,
if you,
barring
when
it sort of being like that one picture book where maybe socially the society's not ready or whatever and shifts there, but let's just
right.
take a typical.
So typically, if say I got, a submission and I sent it out immediately and an editor wanted to buy it right away, so everything happened really fast, then the soonest it would likely come out would be about 18 months ish. From that initial offer to publication, maybe sometimes 2 years, kind of
So 18 months to 2 years,
Yeah.
barring any pandemics coming back.
Right. And not to mention that that doesn't include, like you said, the submission timeline, right? Because even that process. So
Okay.
when you get an agent, you're waiting for that agent to respond, right, for an answer. But then when your book goes out on submission with the editors, you're waiting and waiting
Okay.
and waiting because editors are getting tons and tons of submissions too that they have to read through and make decisions on. And so it's just a really long, long game of waiting.
A lot of waiting. So
Yeah.
how much is your story getting read? So when people get the rejection, I mean, it's difficult to know, right? Because every agent is literally a different person and they all have their different tastes and likes and dislikes, and their boss is telling them whatever. So there are so many factors going into this. But they also don't have time to like write a letter per writer saying, hey, if you could just maybe not tell me about 100 characters in the first two pages, or who knows? Like, not, it's not personalized, right? So is there any way to know how much they're reading your book and how much it is the book?
I think that when someone is really like sees value in what you've written and sees the potential, then they might be more inclined to write a note or two of that personalization, right? So it could be like, wow, I was really drawn in by this premise and I liked what you did with, the dog character, but I didn't fall in love with the rest of the story, or the rest of the story didn't hook me, or whatever it was, right? So you might get some of those kind of really small, vague personalizations, and I'd like to think that that means they got a little bit further than
Okay.
most, right? If you're getting the form, chances are they're probably not getting very far, right? They
Okay.
know immediately within that first page, 2 pages, 3 pages, that it's not for them.
It's not for them. So then there's you either go back, maybe find another trusted reader, maybe find it's so difficult. I
It
think
is,
too
Kate. It is.
you get like, you know how the last few years there's like tons of World War II stories came out, you know, and I think a lot of times writers are like, oh, I have a World War II story, but it's almost past time, isn't it? Or do you
Yeah,
think, yeah, so now we're
absolutely.
moving on to
Because by the
something else?
time, by the time the book comes out, that book was contracted,
Yeah,
18
2 years
months
before,
prior, right? Or 2 years
right?
before, yeah.
So now most
So
likely
they're on to
another
the next.
fad is
Yeah,
coming, and we don't know what that is. They don't tell us. This is their
right. And that's why I mean, that's why people typically say, like, don't write to the trends. You absolutely
Okay.
should not, right? Like, the trends come and go. Just write the book that you really, really want to write, that you're really excited about.
Yeah.
Something that's fresh and new and, that only you can tell.
Yes, just don't think you're gonna get rich right now. Like it might take 3 years, like that one writer, you know, and who knows when she actually, you know, submitted it and finished it. So this is I've also heard stories of people ending up selling their second before their first ever got sold. And then once their second got sold, they go back to their first. So it's hard to make a career out as a writer in the beginning,
It
right?
is. It is. Especially also, with the traditional publishing pay structure, it's hard too, because it's either typically broken up into two, three, or four advance payments, right? So if you have, a $100,000 advance, you are going to see that maybe 25% of that on signing of the contract, then the next submission, or the next bit on the when the book when you hand in the final draft, right, when it's
Okay.
accepted, and then the third payment is going to be on publication, right? So whether that's in thirds or fourths or halves,
Sure.
that's it's usually you see that, like, contract, delivery and acceptance, and then publication.
Okay. Oh, wow.
And maybe even a year later too. I think some publishers are trying to delay you out and say, like, okay, well, you get the final one even later, which is just bonkers to me.
That is, but then if you see like how books are selling, it's not too bonkers because it is for the writer. The industry is very, very strange. I mean, I saw a fact the other day on Facebook, which I was like, I wonder if this is true. So like 80% of American adults hadn't bought a book in the last year. And I was like, how is that
Oh,
possible?
wow.
Like You want to see my TBR file? Like, how do they do this? 80% seems really high, but I think more and more with the market being saturated, it's quite difficult to sell. Is it still, do you still have to sell 50,000 books to hit the New York Times bestseller? Is that sort of the thing, or have they changed that?
That is a statistic that I should know, but I do not.
We
So,
know, I don't think anyone knows anymore because they just put the sticker on everything. They're like, we sold it. It's great. I have no idea because now you contend with, like, does it matter between New York Times or Amazon? They ruined everything. And that can be like an hour. It was a bestseller for an hour. And now USA Today is coming back, though. Who knows? That will all change. So when you were an agent, you dealt a lot with children's books and YA books, young adult books. And you have a lot of experience in, I think, as those two genres were changing too, and I think they still are changing. Because A, we see young adult, like young adult technically is 12 to 18. Is that still correct?
I think that's what the
Traditionally,
some
it
of
is.
yeah, or 14 to 18 kind of it, you can see kind of both
You can
on
see both, right?
books,
There's an
depending.
argument to have that middle grade difference, which I think you can do digitally, right? So on the digital end of the bookstores, you can sort of like middle grade, you know, or like recommended for this age group. It's a little bit harder in the actual store. Like they have sections and it's difficult to find where to go, right? So what makes a difference between the children's books and the YA books? And then, like the YA books versus adult books.
Yeah, it's a good question. So I think you're right. A lot of people, they get very confused about this, because if I were to say to someone, okay, well, I'm going to write a children's book, I think the first thing that comes to most people's mind is I'm going to write a picture book. But really,
Right.
under the umbrella of children's publishing, you have picture books, you have chapter books, you have middle grade, and then you have YA, right?
Okay.
And then there's also like graphic novels and some of those types of things. But traditionally, it's just that picture books, chapter books, middle grade, and YA. And so middle grade is kind of like that 10 to, or like, yeah, 9, 10-ish to 13, 14, right? So
Okay.
it's for younger readers, or like those middle schoolers or higher elementary. And then picture books are going to be what you know of as picture books, as most people think of as children's books. And then young adult is, as we said, kind of above that, right? And the thing about it is that picture books only go up till about 7, and they're for very young readers, and for lap reading and all of that sort of thing. And then middle grade is they're at that age where things are starting to get, they're better readers. They're starting to worry about family and friendship and things like that. So the themes that you see in middle grade books are kind of a little different as well from like YA, right?
Okay.
They're usually sweeter. I mean, that's kind of a generalization. There's plenty of very heavy middle grade books, but they're meatier
Okay.
than like chapter books and picture books, obviously. And then YA is a step up from that, right? It has more older themes and older characters, right? So that's the other thing. The character, you can kind of place your book and where it belongs based on the character's age, right? So if
Okay.
you're right, so if you're writing like a 14-year-old, that's where things get a little trickier, because
Right.
no YA reader is going to want to read about a 14-year-old. Middle graders might, but that 14 is where things start to get a little bit more, subject matter wise, a little trickier, right? And
Yeah.
so that 14-year-old age group, I think, is where publishers have a really hard time placing it for the right reader, even though there is a need for those kids who are ready to go on to more advanced books, but they're not necessarily ready for more advanced subject matter, right?
Subject
They're,
matter.
yeah.
Yeah, I find that difficult as a mom with one in each group. Like, it is difficult. I was conversing with a bunch of writers. We were kind of going on this whole Threads discussion on YA, and it is getting really difficult to decide what your teen is prepared for or your preteen But even for my teens, I have very lax rules when it comes to reading. I mean, I pulled off of my grandmother's shelf, so I feel like a bit of a hypocrite if I put too many rules. Like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is not a YA read, I'll tell you that. But when you're bored at
Right.
grandma's house, you might read it. But my oldest has a really difficult time finding things because she doesn't like graphic sex at all. She wants everything closed doors. And it is a sort of everyone who's writing it tends to be my age. And it seemed like the theme was, well, there wasn't enough that educated me when I was, I mean, when we were in the 90s. So I don't want my daughter to be like that. And now it's interesting though, because we see, tend to revert back to our teenage selves and how the
Right.
world was, and it's not the same. And so it's interesting to like try to navigate that world as a reader and try to understand what you want and who's going to give it to you. And I can't imagine the publishers as well are like, how do you keep categorizing things down? Right? Like
Right.
how, like violence. A lot of people have don't like violence, but a lot of the top books last year were quite violent
Yeah.
for YA.
Right.
So
Right.
this is a strange conversation that I'm not sure has a resolution at the end of it.
Yeah, I don't think that there's been any sort of resolution at all. I think that it's going to continue to keep changing. And I think, though, that the point is that there are still editors and publishers out there that are, and obviously readers and parents that are looking for books that are less advanced in those subject matters, or that want those sort of more chaste type reading experiences versus what we're seeing in traditionally published, graphic YA. But there are those books out there, and I think there are people that are passionately trying to bridge that gap. But yeah, they might be harder to find. So I know that one of my clients, she was talking with her editor about, like, her editor said, "Okay, I want you to write a YA," and this client had previously only written middle grade. And her first response to the editor was, "Well, I don't write sex." And that's totally fair. And and this editor said, "That's okay." That it can be, it doesn't have, you don't have to have sex in it. So that just goes to show, kind of like, you don't feel like you have to, if you want to write a YA, you shouldn't feel like you have to write about the stuff that you don't want to write about. And because there's still going to be people that, can read a romance that doesn't have the sex on the page, and it can fly in the industry as well. There can be people that really passionately, support it. I mean, you think about, like, Divine Rivals, right? Which was a Wednesday book. That's the publisher, and they do a lot of crossover between YA and adult, and that's not necessarily a really graphic. There's, I mean, there is some sex, but it's not very, like, graphic sex, not like,
I mean, my
you
daughter
know.
loved Perks of Being a Wallflower, which I loved as a teen, and it deals with a lot of very heavy issues. The storyline is really deep and intricate, and it leaves you thinking a lot, but there isn't a lot of there are suggestions. But I would say compared to today, it's really closed door. Like there's some getting close and touching, but maybe because the 90s that wasn't really acceptable. Possibly. So what you're saying is if you're writing a YA, don't feel like you have to go with maybe what BookTok tends to be feeding you on your algorithm, but what you're mostly passionate about.
I think that if your characters and your stories speak to your readers, then there's, they're not gonna be like, "Well, shoot, I'm gonna close this book because there's no sex in it." I mean, especially because, like, if it's already marketed in such a way that, or you hear something about it, it'll be clear that that's not the type of reading experience you're gonna get when you open this book, particular book, right?
I think it's funny, even Colleen Hoover's The End of It Ends With Us, the one with the pink cover. Like that didn't even have that graphic, which is interesting. People got really mad about it without having read it. And I was like, oh man, there are worse books that you your teen could be reading. Let me tell you, I'll show you the other ones. So what do you see with YA and with middle grade? Maybe you see it the same as with adults, as far as like story goes, because now that you're the literary agent and you book coach, and then you do editorial as well, like, or editing as well. How do you feel about like what people are missing story-wise? Because I think sometimes we're so focused on like a trend or like maybe a character. I don't know. Like you could go through a lot of different things that there's like something lacking from the story. And a lot of times writers don't know what that means. They're like, could you flesh this out more? Can you do like get more in depth? And there's all these sort of phrases of like, oh. And I think it comes down to like the story, there's something missing. Do you have any examples of like what that might be from your experience?
To me, I think it's about sort of meeting the character where they're at, right? And because as adults, we are writing with hindsight, right? So it's hard for us to sometimes remember what it felt like to be 12 or 13 or even 16, 17, right? And so if you think back, or the way that I see it is like, how big is your world, right? How big is the character's world? So if you're 12 or 13, you're really focused on your friends, your family. You've grown up with your family, and now your worldview is getting bigger, right? Your network is expanding, and you're trying to figure out where you fit and where your peers are compared to you and all of that, right? Because as a kid, you're just like in your own little head, and all you care about is yourself. And then middle grade happens, and it gets a little bigger. And then with young adult, I feel like it gets even bigger. You start to worry, wonder about the world and your place in it and your future. And so if you kind of think about that in like concentric circles, right? Like,
Interesting.
so a lot of those themes in a young adult book are gonna be bigger, right? Or in the middle grade are gonna be more close to the reader, close to the character's
Interesting.
age, right? Like in their little world. That's
Yeah.
kind of like one way that I think about it. And like, just what are the issues that they're thinking about and concerned with? Friendship, and then in YA, you might have world build or world stakes, right? Like higher stakes with the world and your place in the world, and then romance and things, versus like in middle grade, they might be starting to get curious about a little bit of romance, but it's just that, like, the heart flutters and like the little crushes and like that sort of thing. It's not like, oh my gosh, I need this person, or like, it lacks the angst and the hormones that comes with a lot of the YA.
Yes, that will all come rushing at some. I like that idea, the concentric circles, because that sort of makes it more easier to understand, I guess, when you're looking at a character or a plot line, this story that you have in your head that you're trying to get on ink and paper. I mean, it's really difficult to do that, but I like that. So what when maybe if they're trying to introduce these different themes, or maybe it's a story about maybe a preteen in which the world sort of invades their world. Is that would that let's say the character's 12, is that still a middle grade where you would still like focus a lot on how that world is invading the bubble maybe that they have instead of
Exactly. Like,
focusing that way?
yeah, it's not like, how am I gonna, what's my role in this? It's like, how can I protect my
Interesting.
friends and family, right? Or like, how can I make sure that my little bubble doesn't get popped, or that it goes back to normal, or whatever it is, right, that character wants.
That makes a lot of sense. I think that because I've been trying to figure that out for different clients of like, because you feel it, right? Like there's that feeling where you're like, this is too much. But that makes sense where like their mind would still be on how does this affect me in this circle here? Not so much. Like it's difficult to understand the world even at my age. Like it's too big. Okay, that makes sense. I like that. So your experience was a lot with children's and YA, but now that you're at Story and Prose, that's your website, storyandprose.com. Are you only focusing on YA and children's, or are you focusing as well as on
Nope.
adults?
No, I love adult fiction as well, but strictly fiction, definitely.
Just fiction.
Anything is, I love, being from man fiction or fantasy thrillers, all that.
Okay. Oh, good. So when people come to you for book coaching, let's go with book coaching first, because sometimes Well, book coaches, every individual book coach sort of does things differently. So how do you define your book coaching and what people can expect if they come to you, and maybe why they would seek out a book coach? Maybe the frustration points at which you might suggest they seek out a book coach.
Yeah, so I mean, there's lots of different reasons someone might come to a book coach. You know, some people might need just like that accountability and the help, like keeping them on track and making sure that not only are they writing forward and creating a book, but they're also like it's making sense along the way, right? The story is working and the writing is actually working. And so some people like that. It's a little more like handholding, right? Versus like if you're writing on your own and you're writing on your own, you're like, I don't know if this is any good and I'll figure it out later. You know, it's sometimes nice to have that person that's actually helping you. What I really like to do, I think that my focus is moving towards like the revision, right? So if someone comes to me with a draft, and then I can say, okay, like let's fix this, you know, let's get this ready for, you know, whether it's you want to go traditional and try to go query route, you know, I can help with that. But like really, really dig into the text and figure out, okay, here's the bones, here's what I'm seeing that I love and that's working. And then just kind of help them draw out the best of it. Kind of like what I used to do when I worked with my agenting clients, just like help get elevate that submission, right? So that hopefully they get better luck in those query trenches, right?
What do you see on average? What writers should expect? Like I try to tell people, you'll probably throw away as many words as end up in your manuscript. And I say that because I hated hearing that 10 years ago because it just seemed frustratingly ridiculous to me, but I think it's very true. So I've come around where I'm like, I think possibly as the more books you write, maybe you throw away fewer, right? But when you get that manuscript of all the probably hundreds at this point that you've seen, how much of it do you gets changed? When I mean, and this is a writer who thinks their story's done, right? We all think that's done.
Well, you know, this is one of those frustrating answers, but like it varies, right? Because obviously there's by the times people find me different stages or their abilities, right? And their skills is not the same across the board, right? So someone might have it might come to me and I might say, oh wow, like this is in good shape and we don't have too much to do. We have to tweak this, we have to tweak that, you know, throw out this, throw out that. And then there's others that it's like, okay, like let's go kind of back to more to the drawing board. So it totally varies based on the skill level of the writer, quite honestly, and how much they've already studied story and studied writing and fiction writing tactics and that sort of thing.
Oh, that's an interesting variant though, how much they've actually studied story. Because I think many of us, if you have a talent, let's say, there's the tendency to think in the writing world, which I don't know why, because there's no other talent like this, right? Like if you're a talented singer, you're still like getting singing lessons, like all the time. They have mentors and whatever. And yet somehow in the writing world, if you have a talent, a lot of times it might get seen in the short story writing in college or in high school, and then creating a 300-400 page novel is, I have found, completely different. And that's when you have to go, wait a minute, my instinct on story might not be enough for the structure of story, right? So it's an interesting caveat that you point out of how much they've actually studied storytelling. Because that's a big one.
But also someone could have a really good sense of story
Oh,
and
yeah.
like, you know, I can see that there's the, you know, a good arc there, but then like the more micro level writing isn't as good. And so that's what we have to really focus on with that client, right? So just it varies with the different writers and their skill levels and where their weaknesses and strengths are.
So you like to see a manuscript first. Or pages, I guess, and then you sort of individualize your packages, or how does okay.
Yeah, it's basically, especially like with revision, I mean, until I see it and read it through. So what I do, or what I where I really envision myself going is being able to take on a full manuscript and then break it down, teach them to break it down alongside to see how they properly assess their book. And then so we both kind of come back together after a month of reading and assessing and kind of talk about what we saw. I have my assessment letter, and then we create kind of a revision plan from there and work through it together over the course of, the next 3-ish months or so.
Okay,
So,
that's
yeah.
not bad. So about 4 months if they have a completed manuscript of sort of looking and you're probably learning so much as the writer during that time too.
Right. And depending, of course, on the word count, right? So, like, if you're going to come to me with a 120,000 word book, it's not going to take 4 months. It's going to take a lot longer,
What? And with those sci-fi epic sagas that people have. But I always encourage people to, especially if you're not somebody that likes to read all these craft books, because reading is one thing, but putting it into action is totally different. It's like going to math
It
class
is.
where you're like, yeah, I understand that. And then you're like, do the work. And you're like, yeah, I don't understand what that means
Totally.
anymore. So
Yeah.
having someone like you to like go through it and be like, okay, that's what I'm looking for.
Right. And to help me fix it. So I think that, like, with editor, like, with when people out there hire developmental editors or, content editors or whatever, it's like you get this assessment and then it's like, okay, bye, versus like getting the assessment and then someone to actually help you through that revision, because revision is a beast that is, it's a tricky beast, right? And some people are like, okay, well, I have all this information, but I don't know how to fix it now. I think that that's a common frustration with a lot of writers when they get an editorial assessment, right?
I think that's very true. It's hard to find an editor without having at least one experience that's just terrible. I mean, where do you go? The internet is huge. That you might get word of mouth recommendations. That's why I try to have you guys come on here and sort of have a pre-introduction to people. But then, yeah, most editors that you find maybe on whatever website will give you a letter and send you on your way. It's like, improve your dialogue. Okay.
How do I do that? Right. Versus like in the pages. So like with this, like my revision program that I do, it's like, I have the assessment and it's not going to get really line comment heavy at all until we're then back into the weeds of the words. And like, I'm helping them saying, okay, here's what I'm seeing in the actual line level micro elements of your story,
Yes. Yeah, because before you do that, you might as well figure out how to cut a character or bring in a character or whatever it is that you need to do, because who cares about your words, like on the, phrase by phrase until the story's done. All right. So I like that. So the between book coaching and editorial services, is that just sort of like does that sort of mesh together, or are those two separate entities in your business?
Well, I mean, obviously, if someone wants to just get an assessment and say, okay, like, I just need you to tell me, and they just want that, like, read through and the assessment, and then I do offer that as well. And then I also offer a couple of little, like, query assessments and that sort of thing, right? Or pitch package, right? I say, like, okay, I'll read your first 10 pages and I'll just see what I tell you what I see, right? But I'm not going to help you fix any of it. That's
But
where the book coaching comes in.
you can get the book coaching or try to query that out and they'll help you with that later, right? So, when people come in to storyandprose.com, they just scroll down halfway and it kind of looks like either click book coaching or click editorial services. And I assume once they talk to you, you guys sort of figure out where do you think you'll fit best. But I think, I mean, between, 4, 6, 7 months, this all depends on the writer, by the way, listeners, since the timeline depends way more on you than it depends on Karen all the time. Like, I've had to fire clients because I'm like, you're not even writing. I don't know why you're paid. Stop paying me. I don't know what we're doing here. Or should they fill out your contact page when if they're interested in sort of starting to work with you?
Yeah, or you have more book a call with me, or just reach out with a message. Whatever, whatever.
Awesome. So we will have the links in the show notes. Yeah, you have. Oh, it's right here. Free phone call. Everyone likes a free. Well, writers don't like free phone. Writers are like, I'm so shy. I'd rather just send an email. Well,
Well,
this
that's
is what I
fine too. I don't mind that too.
find.
Yeah.
That's what I find personally. Or maybe they're just shy to talk to me. I don't know. So send an email, y'all. It's okay. And Karen won't bite. She's been very lovely to talk to, but I'll have storyandprose.com in the show notes. I think if you guys are looking for Karen's sort of expertise, she is definitely someone that you should check out and get your story done. I mean, it's April, right? You could get your story done in 2024. That'd be amazing. And
Yeah.
like ready to go. So thank you so much for Karen for coming on and talking to us all about your experience and about the publishing world.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It's been really fun.